Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading Midland Reporter-Telegram for March 22, 2024. Community Raises Book Concerns to MISD by Ben Schaefer, staff writer. Local pastors, residents, and other advocates attended MISD's board meeting Tuesday to voice their concern about books in MISD campus libraries. Johnny Paredes, pastor at Faith Church Midland, brought a book called Me and Earl and the Dying Girl by Jesse Andrews, which he found at Legacy High School via MISD's website. Paredes said the book is filled with profanity, sexual practices, and other messages that promote disrespect, racism, and violence. Paredes was the first of a handful of pastors and others who asked the MISD board to review content in school libraries. A former MISD teacher brought a book called Shout by Lori Anderson, which she said she found in Legacy High School's library. She said she had a problem with the book's discussion of guns and a scene that described a game of Russian roulette. The former teacher suggested implementing a committee to review books that go into district libraries before they are put on the shelves. Alma Thompson, a former MISD parent, wanted to bring attention to what she called pornography that glorifies drug use, casual sex, incest, and suicide. She said she discussed a book called Identical by Ellen Hopkins. A man named John Amanchukwu attended the meeting as well. Amanchukwu's website, inogod.us, describes him as a preacher, author, and activist from North Carolina. Amanchukwu has been in the news all around the country for attending school board meetings and discussing books in school libraries or other matters. Amanchukwu brought a book called Push by Sapphire to the meeting. He read a depiction in which a father in the book sexually abuses his daughter. Amanchukwu finished reading the excerpt and then said, "Any of the six men on the MISD school board who don't push for the book to be taken out of the library are either punks or perverts." After repeating that message a few times, MISD police were asked to escort Amanchukwu from the meeting. In response to the meeting and the books brought forth, MISD released a statement. MISD has collected the books of concern that were brought to the attention of the school board to expedite the review process and will follow legal framework and board policy, EF, local, to review them. The statement reads, MISD takes this very seriously and will take appropriate action upon review of the books. The district adheres to the law and EF local for the process by which a school library acquires, maintains, and withdraws materials and follows this policy when books are challenged. Should community members discover a book they find to be objectionable, they are encouraged to bring their concerns to the attention of administrators in accordance with board policy. MISD officials said Thursday the book Push by Sapphire was not found in any campus libraries, even though the district's online catalog indicates there was one copy at Midland Freshman High School and a lost copy at Legacy High School. However, according to dated screenshots submitted by a Reporter Telegram reader on Tuesday, the district's online catalog showed one copy of Push available at Legacy High School and another copy at Midland Freshman High School. It is unclear how the book was updated to a lost status overnight. Police chase of stolen vehicle leads to crash, vehicle fire, by B.K. Richter, staff writer. A vehicle chase by Midland Police Department led to a passenger car being engulfed in flames and two occupants being transported to Midland Memorial Hospital with serious injuries. According to a city press release, Midland police responded to the area of South Midkiff Road and West Wall Street in an attempt to locate a stolen vehicle on Thursday at 1:14 a.m. Officers did locate the vehicle and initiated a traffic stop of the vehicle. At that point, officers say the driver of the stolen vehicle evaded the stop. Officers then pursued the vehicle, which proceeded to travel westbound along Bankhead Highway. According to officer accounts, the driver of the stolen passenger vehicle failed to negotiate a turn, left the roadway, and then struck a tree in the 4100 block of West Wall Street. MPD reported extracting two occupants from the passenger vehicle as it caught fire. The occupants were then transported to Midland Memorial Hospital with serious injuries. The investigation has since been turned over to the Texas Department of Public Safety. Sergeant Stephen Blanco of DPS did comment on the case to confirm that DPS had taken over the investigation of the crash. However, because the investigation is ongoing, no additional information is being released to the public at this time. City's Health Department issues botulism warning by B.K. Richter, staff writer. The City of Midland's Health Department has warned of limiting outdoor activities, especially during particularly dusty and windy days, after two Midland infants were tested and confirmed for botulism earlier in the year. The botulism cases were first reported by a Texas Tribune article, which linked three of the infant cases to the City of Midland. There are a few different types of botulism infection caused by the bacteria Clostridium botulinum and sometimes other Clostridium bacteria, said Tyler Collins, an epidemiologist for the City of Midland, in a press statement. He said that bacteria are common and occur naturally within the environment, which produces spores that can grow the botulism toxins. Infants ingest the dirt, either from being outside on a dusty day, perhaps through a pacifier dropped in the dirt, or dirty hands handling a bottle or pacifier, and studies suggest environmental sources as the most common sources of exposure for infants, Collins said. Another way infants can acquire these toxic spores is through eating honey, which can also contain the spores, and so children under the age of one should not consume honey. When infants ingest the spores, they produce toxins in their guts that infants haven't yet developed protections against, leading to botulism infection. If you are gardening or doing yard work, wash your hands before handling pacifiers or even water, Collins said during a press conference on Wednesday. Just try and limit that exposure as much as possible. Once a physician suspects botulism, they call the State Department. Once the case has been confirmed, and if the case meets the criteria, then the antitoxin will arrive at the hospital, usually within 24 hours. And so in all of these cases, the antitoxin had already been flown in and was in the process of being distributed to the hospitals, Collins said. Additionally, Collins said, it is helpful to know the signs and symptoms of botulism, as well as taking certain precautions. As far as the symptoms of the infection, parents or guardians should be aware of constipation, poor feeding, weak sucking, drooping eyelids, a weak cry, dilated or sluggish reactive pupils, poor head control, and respiratory difficulty. For now, the common factor that links all three infant botulism cases in Midland is the geographic location of the cases in Northwest Midland. All had outdoor exposures, Collins said during the press conference. However, when asked if the city or the state would follow up with the environmental testing of certain areas within the city, the answer was no. We do not typically do environmental testing because the bacteria is common in the natural environment, and so detecting it is not a surefire method indicating the source of exposure, Collins indicated in a press statement. Due to HIPAA laws, the precise location of these infections, as well as the identities of the families affected, cannot be shared. However, city officials did confirm the source of exposure to be environmental. That is the most common form of exposure for infant botulism cases due to the fact that bacteria environmentally is widespread, Collins said in a press statement. Based on our investigation and lab results, specifically the different toxins in each case, we don't believe the cases were infected due to a common source of exposure. That determination also comes from our conversations with the State Health Department and consulting information provided to us by the California Infant Botulism Treatment and Prevention Program. For now, city officials are unaware if drought conditions or more soil in the air produce more cases of airborne botulism. In California, there have been links to drought conditions with the illnesses known as valley fever. We do know that the fungus that causes valley fever is endemic in our area, and it is a fungus that gives off spores, but those are inhaled, whereas botulism is ingested, said Collins. Based on our conversation with the California Infant Botulism Program, it's unclear if there's correlation or connection between the expansion of valley fever cases and infant botulism, and if the conditions that lead to infections for those two illnesses are the same. Law enforcement grappling with new migrant arrest law by Sean Murphy and Eric Verduzco. Associated Press, Sanderson, Texas. During the 9 hours that Texas was allowed to arrest and deport people who illegally enter the U.S., Sheriff Thaddeus Cleveland never changed his tactics with migrants in his remote border county. Not because he opposes the idea, there's just no practical way to do it, said the sheriff of Terrell County, where last year an average of about 10 people each day were caught crossing the border from Mexico. "We don't have a van that we can use to transport people in," said Cleveland, whose county touches more than 50 miles of border, most of which is an unforgiving rocky desert landscape. Texas's extraordinary expansion into immigration enforcement remained on hold Thursday after a whirl of legal action that included the Supreme Court allowing it to take effect Tuesday while sending it back to an appellate court. For further review. Shortly before midnight, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals put the law known as Senate Bill 4 back on hold. The confusion along Texas's vast border during that brief window revealed that many sheriffs were unprepared, unable, or uninterested in enforcing SB 4 in the first place. For months, Texas has made urgent appeals to judges that the state cannot afford to wait for tougher border measures. But given a chance to test Republican Governor Greg Abbott's latest provocation with the Biden administration over administration, there was no indication any law enforcement agency in Texas tried. Defiance from Mexican government, which said it would not accept any migrants whom Texas attempts to send back across the border, and caution among law enforcement officials cast uncertainty over what a full implementation would look like. The law would allow any Texas law enforcement officer to arrest people suspected of entering the country illegally. But Smith County Sheriff Larry Smith, the president of Texas Sheriff's Association, said the law will have little effect in his jurisdiction in East Texas, which is far closer to neighboring Louisiana and Oklahoma than Mexico. "Our office won't have much to do with Senate Bill 4 unless we're working with one of our brother sheriffs or sister sheriffs on the border," Smith said, "because you have to be able to prove they came across the border illegally. And unfortunately, you can't do that this far into the state of Texas without violating some of their rights. If we start going and talking to everyone asking for papers, where do we stop?" Smith said. Once in custody, migrants could either agree to a Texas judge's order to leave the U.S. or be prosecuted on misdemeanor charges of illegal entry. The law says they're to be sent to ports of entry along the U.S.-Mexico border, even if they are not Mexican citizens. Migrants who don't leave could face arrest, again, under more serious felony charges. In court, Texas has argued the law mirrors the U.S. government's immigration enforcement. The Justice Department has argued that it is a clear violation of federal authority and would create chaos at the border. Abbott reminded a crowd at a conservative policy conference in Austin on Wednesday. "Even with SB 4 on hold, Texas could still arrest migrants who trespass on private property. That more limited operation began in 2021. Like many sheriffs and law enforcement officers who say they support the new law, Cleveland faces serious logistical problems in how to implement it. His county has fewer than 1,000 residents, his jail has a capacity for just 7 people, and the closest port of entry is a drive of more than 2.5 hours away. We'll continue to do what we do, turn over people we apprehend to the U.S. Border Patrol and then wait for the courts to figure out what they're going to do," Cleveland said. Typical calls to Cleveland's office about migrants who have entered the U.S. illegally involve people who have traversed miles of high desert with limited supplies, hoping to find work. In responding to a call from a landowner on Thursday, Cleveland encountered a 32-year-old migrant from Mexico trying to make his way to pick strawberries in Florida. He engaged him in conversation in Spanish, asked if he needed food or water, and brought him to a holding room at his office to wait for Border Patrol. "The vast majority that we catch, illegal aliens, are no different than me or you," Cleveland said. "I enjoy having conversations with them in Spanish." finding out where they're from, finding out where they're going, things of that nature. Republican legislators wrote the law so that it applies in all of the state's 254 counties, although Steve McCraw, the director of the Texas Department of Public Safety, has said he expects it will mostly be enforced near the border. About 100 sheriffs visited the state capitol in Austin on Wednesday to express support to Abbott for the new law, but their responses were mixed about how they would actually enforce it. Still, the fear among residents was palpable as a regular meeting Wednesday at a community center in the southwest Houston neighborhood that is home to many Latino and immigrant families. Police Chief Tony Finner was asked numerous questions about the law and what reassurances he could provide people who may now not want to report crimes because they fear being arrested over their immigration status. One woman told Finner in Spanish that the new law is fracturing the relationship between the community and the police. It's creating an image of the police as the enemy, when in reality they are the ones that protect us. Ruben Perez, the Special Crimes Bureau chief in the Harris County District Attorney's Office, sought to reassure residents, saying the law is not in effect and the U.S. Constitution protects everyone. We don't care whether you're here legally or illegally, or whether you got here legally or illegally. We are here to protect you, he said, prompting applause. That's the message that I want to leave. Noodle House dishes out Chinese comfort food by Kat Chandler for Midland Reporter Telegram. In typical West Texas style, the 80-degree days of spring were interrupted by a cold snap that left me craving a warm, comforting meal. Noodle House, located at the intersection of Andrews Highway and Midkiff Road, was the perfect choice to cut the chill and catch up with my sister over lunch. Almost 7 years ago, Noodle House transformed a former Quiznos sandwich shop into a cozy Chinese restaurant with efficient, no-nonsense service. The exterior windows are adorned with photos of the food offerings, and inside, about 15 small tables are squeezed into the narrow space. Diners are separated from the kitchen by only a counter topped with glass, through which one can watch the pulling of Chinese noodles and wrapping of dumplings, all done expertly by hand. The restaurant gets busy for weekday dine-in lunches. This trip, by 12:15 p.m., all tables were full, with a few folks standing next to the front door, braving the wind to wait. However, by 1 p.m., the crowd had dispersed, no doubt needing a quick nap before returning to the office. In the evenings, Noodle House does a strong carryout and delivery business, and there is rarely a need to wait for a table. As the name suggests, at Noodle House, the hand-pulled noodle is king. The menu reflects this, describing and depicting tender dumplings and bao buns, warm noodle soups, and hearty dry noodle dishes. While the number of dishes is limited, the variations are many. Most entree dishes offer a choice of chicken, beef, shrimp, vegetable, or a combination. Dumplings and bao are available in choices of beef or pork and can be steamed, boiled, or pan-fried. My sister's favorite appetizer was the spicy baby cucumbers, and mine was the spicy wonton dish, so we compromised and ordered both. The cucumbers were mildly spicy, tangy, and crisp and fresh. 8 tender pork wontons with flavorful chili oil, topped with shaved vegetables and edamame, made up the spicy wontons. There are times when I have ordered the spicy wontons by themselves for an entree, and they have never disappointed me. For entrees, we both chose beef dishes, which tasted surprisingly different despite the same protein. The pan-fried sliced noodle had a savory sauce coating the flat noodles, strips of pan-fried beef, and slices of crisp bok choy. I tried something new and ordered the yupo noodle dish, and I was delighted by the intense, tangy seasoning and the tender beef slices. I will definitely order the yupo noodle again, despite the coordination challenge of chopsticks and such wide noodles. With the generous portion sizes, both of us left the restaurant with large takeout boxes. With its delicious food and open restaurant concept, Noodle House makes a great place for either a quirky date or a shareable meal with friends. And for times when life calls for a movie marathon in pajamas, order for carryout or delivery by phone, the restaurant's website, or DoorDash. Prices at Noodle House are almost unrealistically reasonable. Two diners can split an appetizer and entree for about $20 local base price. I even heard a rumor that two hungry sisters can order an entire feast with copious leftovers for under $50, whatever the season or however many seasons experienced in one day in West Texas. Noodle House's offerings make a tasty lunch or dinner any time of the year. Check it out for yourself. Address 3200 Andrews Highway, Suite 200, Midland, Texas, 79701. Phone 432-803-7500. Hours Monday through Saturday, 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Sunday, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Dine-in, delivery, and carry-out. Social media, Noodle House on Facebook. Website with the menu, noodlehousemidland.com. New Mexico Senator, Anti-Energy Industry Attacks Will Continue, by Mella McEwen, Oil Editor. New Mexico's legislative session ended last month, and there was a number of bills that could have affected the region's oil and gas industry. Luckily, many of those bills fell by the wayside during the 30-day session, reported New Mexico State Senator Greg Nibert. Nibert, who had served in the State House of Representatives since 2016, was appointed to the State Senate by Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham just before the session started in January. He succeeded Senator Stuart Ingle, who retired. 6 months ago, I was minority leader in the House, Nibert told members of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association at their membership luncheon Thursday. Since then, my life has been a whirlwind. He told the gathering that 583 bills were introduced to the session and only 66 passed both houses. Among the agenda items set forth by Governor Grisham was reworking the state's oil and gas law that had been enacted in the 1930s. While the industry agrees the law needs to be updated, Nibert said the version under consideration would not have been friendly to you. It would have made it more difficult for you to do business in New Mexico. Proposed changes would have let additional administrative agencies get their nose in your business, he said. Legislation can have unintended consequences, as Nibert showed when he highlighted the Energy Transition Act that sets a statewide standard of 50% renewable energy, of 50% renewable energy by 2030 and 80% by 2040 for investor-owned utilities and rural electric cooperatives. It transitions away from coal toward clean energy. There are electric providers providing power to Texas Panhandle and eastern New Mexico, but Albuquerque and Santa Fe, what will they do, he asked. When wind and solar power are not sufficient, he said those communities could buy power off the grid, but the cost would be significant and is something that could happen in the very near future. I suspect when that occurs, the people of Santa Fe and Albuquerque will band together to change that law, he said. But it takes time to change, so they'll be in a pickle for a while. While a number of bills that would have negatively impacted the industry fell by the wayside, Nibert warned that the attacks will continue. He predicted a resolution that residents have a legal right to clean air, soil, and water if added to the state's constitution will be reintroduced. There will also be efforts to change setback rules regarding how far drilling can be from homes or other structures to more reflect those seen in Colorado, he predicted. The fact of the matter is, New Mexico is highly dependent on your production, he told his audience. Over 50% of our general budget is directly tied to the taxes you pay, the other things you pay. You would think my colleagues on both sides of the aisle would embrace you, thank you for the infrastructure and health care and education, the opportunities you provide. I will thank you. Thank you for deploying capital in our state, for putting up with what you have to put up with to do business in our state, to provide energy to our country, he said. Texas Immigration Law Unconstitutional, Secretary Mayorkas, by Sonia Perez D., Associated Press. Guatemala City, U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas said Thursday that a Texas law giving state authorities the power to arrest and deport migrants who have entered the country illegally is unconstitutional. It is our strongly held view as a matter of law that SB 4, the Texas law, is unconstitutional, and it is our hope and confidence that the courts will strike it down with finality, Mayorkas said during a joint news conference. Guatemala President Bernardo Arevalo in the Guatemalan capital. The Texas law passed last year would allow the state to arrest and deport people who enter the U.S. illegally. The U.S. Justice Department has challenged the law as a clear violation of federal authority. The three-judge panel of the Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals heard argument on the Texas law Wednesday, but did not rule the law is on hold for now. In an interview with the Associated Press later Thursday, Mayorkas added that should SB4 be permitted to proceed, we are very concerned about the effect it would have and the chaos that it could bring to the challenge of border migration. Mayorkas described the U.S.-led regional strategy toward immigration as seeking to build lawful, safe, and orderly pathways for people to reach safety from their place of persecution and, at the same time, returning people to their countries as a consequence when they do not take advantage of those lawful pathways. Among those safe pathways is a U.S. effort to streamline the process for those seeking U.S. asylum in the region through so-called safe mobility offices. They allow migrants to start the process where they are rather than making the dangerous and costly journey to the U.S. border. Guatemala's Safe Mobility Office, unlike some others like Colombia's, is only open to Guatemalans seeking U.S. protection. One of the requests made by Mayorkas' delegation was that Guatemala allow the Safe Mobility Office to process requests for migrants from other countries, according to a Guatemalan official who requested anonymity because the issue was still under discussion. Asked during the joint news conference if the U.S. government had asked Guatemala to sign a Safe Third Country Agreement, which Guatemala's previous president had agreed to during the Trump administration, Mayorkas did not directly answer. Such an agreement would require migrants from other countries passing through Guatemala to seek protection from the Guatemalan government rather than the U.S. border. Asked again in the interview with the AP, Mayorkas said that Guatemala could be a safe destination for some migrants, but that he deferred to Arevalo's administration on that. The U.S. has sought to improve cooperation with countries along the migrant route, including Guatemala, Mexico, Costa Rica, Panama, Colombia, and Ecuador, but Mayorkas acknowledged that it has been more challenging in Nicaragua and Venezuela, where the U.S. has strained relations with those governments. Arevalo explained the talks in similar terms. We are operating under the principle that the immigration phenomenon is a regional phenomenon and that for that reason has to have answers framed in the collaborative efforts of different countries, he said.
Dear Abby, my daughter was 4 when we adopted her. She's 23 now, going to college and moving into an apartment soon. She has been the center of our lives since our older children are grown. We have supported her through abandonment issues, lost boyfriends, school, everything. We went through cancer treatment with her. She acts like things are good here. About a year ago, she met a man who worked at a resort where we vacationed. They traded contact information, and then the lies began. She'd tell us she was traveling with the girls when she was flying to another state. The man is here on a student visa. He may not be able to stay. His plan B is most certainly marriage. We mentioned this possibility to her, but when we did, she became angry and defensive. She dredges up things from years ago to deflect and blame. His family is courting her, sending her gifts for every holiday. She just returned this week from another visit. She doesn't talk about him, but when I was putting something in her room, I saw what looked like an engagement ring. How am I supposed to feel when she keeps these secrets? We've given her every opportunity. Travel, soccer, dance, band, camps, even sent her to Europe on a tour with band members. We pay for her college and her every need. I am hurt, and I don't know what this means for the future since we've only met him once for 5 minutes. Dear Abby responds, your daughter's lying and unwillingness to be open about her plans is a character flaw. People who are proud of what they are doing don't lie about it. It's time you and your spouse sit your daughter down for a serious question and answer session with her and possibly her boyfriend. First among them, why all the secrecy? If they are serious about each other, as the ring would indicate, why have you not met his family? Does she plan to complete her education? If so, does she expect you to continue paying for it? You are entitled to some straight answers, and I sincerely hope you get them. That information will give you a clue how to proceed from here. And another, dear Abby, I am in a relationship with a man of substantial means. I am well educated, but never made a lot of money from my education. My money comes from a relationship I had with a man who died a year and a half ago. I think I may be in love with my current beau, but he has never loved anyone from the middle class. We both have children from previous marriages. I have grandchildren as well. Should I let nature take its course or become more assertive in pursuing more out of our relationship? Dear Abby answers, although you may be tempted to become more assertive about pursuing more, take the slower route and get to know the substantial gentleman better. He may or may not be biased against folks from less fortunate circumstances, but you won't know unless you give yourself the time to see what develops. You can write to Dear Abby at P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069, or visit www.dearabby.com. 24th Annual Mud Bug. The 24th Annual Meals on Wheels of Odessa Mud Bug is scheduled April the 9th. VIP entry begins at 5 p.m. and general admission begins at 6 p.m. at the Ector County Coliseum, Barn G, 4201 Andrews Highway. General admission tickets are $50. Sponsorships are also available. Tickets can be purchased online at tinyurl.com/2U2UZ49S, or you can call at 432-333-6451 for more information. Meals on Wheels of Odessa is teaming up with Sewell Ford as its presenting sponsor. Crawfish, fried catfish, shrimp, hush puppies, and other foods will be on the menu and prepared by Big Daddy's Grill and Bar. A DJ will provide live entertainment and a raffle, including items such as a Louis Vuitton luggage, tickets to see the Texas Rangers, a gun, and a $1,000 gift card. Obituaries. Billy Farmer, age 73, joined her husband Rick Farmer, 75, in heaven on February the 17th. The family invites you to join them in celebrating Billy and Rick's life on Saturday, March the 23rd, at the venue at Latana Acres, 6300 North Golder in Odessa, Texas, at 2 p.m. James Jimmy McKinley Kelly passed away on Saturday, March the 9th. A visitation for James will be held Monday, March the 18th, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Frank W. Wilson Funeral Directors, 4635 Oakwood Drive in Odessa. A funeral service will occur Tuesday, March the 19th at 11 a.m., 4635 Oakwood Drive in Odessa. A committal service will occur Tuesday, March the 19th at 12 p.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens, Business Loop in Odessa. Edna Wylan Anderson, age 80, of Odessa, died Saturday, March the 2nd in Odessa. A celebration of life will be held at 11 a.m. March the 16th at American Heritage Funeral Home. Gabriel Brinto Calderon, age 63, of Odessa, died Tuesday, March the 12th in Odessa. Funeral service was held at 7 p.m. Thursday, March the 14th at Lighthouse of Hope. Robert Gerald Hufty, age 87, of Odessa, died Monday, March the 11th. Memorial service was held at 2 p.m. on March the 16th at the Gerald and Claudine Hufty's residence. Sally Renee Shaver Wilkes, age 58, of Odessa, died Wednesday, March the 13th. Memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, March the 27th at Acres West Funeral Chapel.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, March 16th, 2024. Religion. Sister Christina brings verve to college ministries. Crane native, previously served at UT Austin, and Our Lady of the Lake University by Bob Campbell. Losing their religious faith at college, where new freedoms abound and old habits may easily be abandoned, is an outcome that Sister Cristina Chavez is trying hard to help young Catholics avoid. As the San Angelo Diocese campus minister at the University of Texas Permian Basin and Midland College, Sister Cristina is working to establish a Catholic Students Association and find a faculty sponsor at Odessa College so she can do the same there. Young adults are an underserved population in the church, and it can be hard to find a place where they can serve, she said. They sometimes leave their faith when they leave home, but it can grow and become stronger if they are around others whose faith is important in their lives. Chavez is a native of Crane and a 1970 CHS graduate who earned a degree at Texas Tech University. A member of the Congregation of Divine Providence, she previously served in campus ministry at the University of Texas at Austin and Our Lady of the Lake University in San Antonio. Presiding over weekly meetings since early last year, she serves groups of eight, mostly young men, at UTPB and 12 Midland College early high school students and 5 Midland College students, most of them young women. Without their Catholic Students Association, Chavez said, the students would pass one another on campus without knowing about their common beliefs. But with it, there is a connection, and the community develops. The world opens up as you meet people from different parts of the state and country, and you see different lifestyles, she said. You learn how big the world is, and you find new ways of living your faith. It makes me laugh being an old lady, Chavez said. Young adults are full of energy and enthusiasm. It's one of the best things to be around. She may be reached at cchavez@sanangelodiocese.org or wtx-campusministry@sanangelodiocese.org. Bishop Michael Siss said Chavez learned some effective tools for campus ministry at the University of Texas and Our Lady of the Lake University, and she is putting them to good use here in our area. She works directly with students, faculty, and staff, Bishop Siss said. We are so excited about the new life and energy that Sister Cristina brings to the campus ministries in Odessa and Midland.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.